UWA-517, do you want to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We want to report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind? Over.
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
There 71 Papa Golf, go ahead.
And was there anybody at above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
There 71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's Merger 295. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Do we just call about the UFOs? They're out there. Taking airplanes.
And it is
dispatch.
Bob, I swear to God, four calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty. Four calls on an unidentified flying object.
All right, take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com. Hello everyone and welcome to the show, wherever in the world you are listening from. How are you all? I'm Nick Hunter and this is UFO Chronicles Podcast. We start off today with Francesca in the UK and her strange encounter with the sighting of a UFO followed by a meeting with a strange man. Then remaining in the UK, we meet Pastor David Parry. He is a self-confessed experiencer who has interacted with both the supernatural and the paranormal since being a child. He saw a physical silvery disc in the sky while at school with the other children on the schoolyard. But his greatest interaction with realms beyond was in the summer of 1976, through repeated encounters with balls of light in various colours, who he believes were trying to enrich his horizons. If you enjoy listening to the podcast and would like to help support my work, there is a couple of ways to do this. Either you can join Patreon and become a patron of the show for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate via PayPal. And if you like, you can set up monthly reoccurring payments. All links to support the podcast are below in the show notes and on the website. Any help is extremely appreciated, and it helps the show to continue running. Now, on with the show. Hello, Francesca, and welcome to the podcast.
Hello, thank you for having me.
You're more than welcome. You're calling from Kent in the United Kingdom.
Yes, yeah, that's correct.
On a fine, sunny Easter weekend.
Yes, lovely.
Now, you're going to be sharing an unusual encounter you had on the way to work one morning. Would you like to start at the very beginning, please, Francesca?
Yeah, sure. It was rather peculiar, and I must admit it's been bugging me ever since. So it was the 5th of August last year, which I believe was a Tuesday, and I was walking to work as usual, and it was, I think, like today, a very nice and clear sunny day. And it was probably about, I guess, between 8:30 and 8:45, and the route that I take to work, it sort of goes out. I was trying to explain the area because otherwise it's a little bit confusing, but it's I walk down past a car park, and then in front of me is like a little wooded area which backs onto the railway line, and it's very sort of uneven ground, and there's nothing really there. It's just sort of unused land, I guess, with trees. And then as I walk, so I sort of cut through that into another car park, and then I walk through the car park, if that makes sense. So as I was walking past the first car park down towards the trees, there was absolutely no one around, which is quite unusual, because I would say when I'm walking to work, usually there's a fair few people that I would normally pass. But it might have been during one of the lockdowns. I can't really remember now. So I suppose that could explain it. But so as I was walking along, I saw this. The only way I can describe it is it was like a triangular flying object of some sort. I want to say maybe it's hard to say because of the distance away I was from it and that I'm not very good at sort of guessing how large it was, but I would estimate maybe between 2 and 2.5 meters across, possibly slightly larger, I'm not sure. But it was completely black. It almost looked like a, you know, people when they do paragliding, so it's sort of like a triangular shape coming down out of nowhere, really. I can't say I knew how it got there. And it went down into the trees and then just sort of, I lost sight of it. And when I saw it, I just stopped in my tracks because I was so, it took me so off guard. You know, I take that route to work every day and it's just, I never expected to see anything quite that strange when I was walking. But underneath the black, underneath the sort of triangular part of it, it looked like there was something hanging underneath, like a, the only way I can describe it is like a duffel bag kind of shape, you know, that kind of shape, but I guess solid. And that would have gone from like the tip of the triangle to the bag. But yeah, it sort of went down, came out of nowhere, went down behind it, sort of into the trees. And then I lost sight of it. And I didn't really know what to do. As I said, the ground there was quite uneven, quite rugged. And I just sort of thought, well, I'm in my work clothes. I can't really just take a trip down there. And it's technically private property, I think. So I decided to give it a miss. I was just so surprised. I thought, okay, maybe it's not a good idea to go down there. Let's just continue. So I took my normal route, went round, and obviously I was still trying to keep a lookout for it as I walked past, but I couldn't see it anymore. I couldn't see sort of where it had landed, if it had landed, or whether it had just swooped low and gone back off somewhere, I don't know. And as I cut through the trees and started walking through the second car park, I noticed that a man on a bicycle was cycling towards me. And normally I would say that the car park is fairly busy, but on this occasion it was quite empty, which is fairly unusual, I suppose. As he was cycling towards me, I had this moment where I thought so clearly in my head, I thought he needs to ask me for directions. And so I stopped and he slowed down and stopped next to me. And I looked at him and asked him if he was all right. And I was just absolutely so certain that he needed to ask me for directions, but he didn't say a single word to me. He just grinned at me the whole time and didn't say a single word. And so I was standing there staring at this man, and he looked quite unusual. He was extremely tall and very pale, and he had quite sort of, I guess, like very pale eyes. And he was dressed in this neon colored, like, you know, people who do professional sort of like biking, or they do it a lot, and they wear like the Lycra sort of brightly colored cycle gear. And it was just most peculiar, because I have to say, I have never, I mean, people obviously cycle wherever they want, but I can't say I would imagine that somebody cycling for a specific reason in that sort of outfit would ever have decided to take a shortcut through the car park. But so yeah, we're staring at each other. He's just grinning at me. And I thought, okay, this is getting weird now. So I just asked him, are you okay? And he just kept grinning at me. And I started to get a bit nervous at this point, because it was only then that I really thought to myself, I'm standing alone in a car park with this man who is not speaking to me. So, which I suppose seems quite ridiculous. But so I thought, okay, well, if he's not going to speak to me, he obviously doesn't need to ask for directions. So I'm going to leave. So at this point, I felt a little bit unsafe. So I started to walk away. As I started to walk away, he started to cycle around me on his bike. So I then walked away very quickly. And as I got to the edge of the car park, I turned around and he had gone. He was no longer there. I just wanted to check that he wasn't following me, but he was gone. But it was just a combination of seeing the strange sort of flying object coming down out of the sky and then immediately bumping into that man and his just general behavior and demeanor just felt very strange. And it has been sort of bothering me ever since. I thought to myself it could have been some sort of drone. So I was looking up different types of drones and talking to my husband, who's more familiar with sort of drones and things like that. But I couldn't see that it really, I mean, I don't think any drones are really that big. I can't see why, you know, when I think about where it came from, just out of nowhere, and it sort of just disappeared into the trees. And I thought, something of that size, I'm not sure how that could have happened. And then the band seemingly came out of nowhere. But yeah, so that is basically what I saw. And it was only then that I thought to myself, I really need to know what this is. So I was sort of out there sort of doing a bit of minor research on whether anybody else has seen anything similar, and I sort of just fell down a rabbit hole, and that is actually how I found your podcast.
Yeah, it's usually how people find it, down a rabbit hole.
Yeah. So yeah, I thought I would just reach out and see if, I don't know, anybody else had heard anything similar, or if you'd heard anything particularly similar.
I mean, cupped with the strange object you saw quite early in the morning.
Yeah.
And followed by the strange individual. A lot of people have strange encounters. I've just edited one now, and this guy had a strange encounter with this couple, which didn't seem right. I mean, of course, you know, we're going to meet nutters here and there, but sometimes you meet people and there's just something different about them.
Yeah, it was just the fact that as he was cycling towards me, I had it was like imprinted in my mind that he needed to ask me for directions. And I don't know why I thought that. Because, you know, you come across, like, I walk past many people normally on the way to work, and I never have ever stopped and thought, oh, that particular person needs to ask me for directions. And then he didn't say a single word to me. It was most peculiar.
Didn't say a word and just looked at you, grinning.
Yeah, he was grinning the whole time. It was, yeah. I mean, really, when I think back on it, if it was nighttime, it would have been quite frightening. But I suppose as it was quite early in the morning and I was probably still quite sleepy.
And is it a route you usually take?
Yeah, yeah. And in fact, I got to work and I said to my colleagues, I said, I've just had the strangest experience. And I briefly explained it and they were like, that is weird. And they suggested, and my husband said the same, that I don't take that route to work anymore, or I switch it up just in case it was, I don't know, some person that actually was following me or something like that. But I felt compelled to continue to walk that route because I just felt like, I felt like I needed to meet him again. I don't know why. I just felt completely compelled. I thought, I really wish that I could meet that guy again because I need to ask him who he is and where he came from. But no, I haven't seen him since.
Never seen him since. Unusual.
No.
That's a strange one.
It is, yeah. Although I suppose he could have been a completely normal person. And perhaps he thought I was strange. Who knows?
It's normal to say something, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it was very strange.
He saw you had stopped. So if he stopped, surely, you know, he would have asked you, are you okay?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was thinking. I really thought he was going to say something to me. But it was just the fact that he was grinning the whole time. And I thought, is somebody playing a prank on me?
Even if he didn't speak English, he would have gestured something, you know.
Yeah, or sort of said, like, I don't speak English or something like that. Yeah. And I think normally when you see, I sort of thought maybe if he was professionally cycling somewhere for some reason, maybe there would have been more, he would have been with more people, or I would have seen more cyclists. Because, you know, sometimes you do see that sort of a group of people together. But it was just the fact that there was absolutely no one else around just seemed really strange to me. Because as I said, normally there are quite a few people that I would walk past on the way to work, even throughout sort of the different lockdowns that we've had. It's just been bothering me since. I feel like I need to know not only who the man was, but what the flying object was that I saw. And I really wish that I'd gone down to look for him. But unfortunately, something told me not to. So I just didn't.
So the object, it was, what, 2.5 meters?
I think so. Although I'm generally quite bad at sort of approximating measurements. But yeah, I would say it had to be at least 2, 2.5 meters, possibly.
Okay, so about 6.5, 7 foot, something like that. The area, it was just a wooded area. Was it hilly? Is it hilly all around that area?
Kind of, yeah. I mean, it's a very small sort of wooded area. It's sort of, it dips down, so it's almost, sort of a hill downwards, and the land is very sort of uneven, and it sort of, it borders on the railway line. And then behind the railway line, I think, is more trees. So I almost saw it come down, yeah, past those back trees and then into the trees that were sort of in front of me. And then it sort of just vanished. And I thought something of that size would be unlikely. It would be unlikely that it would be not be visible from the pavement, because it's not sort of like a huge wooded area. It's, yeah, it's just sort of unused land, I think.
Interesting. I mean, I actually saw a paraglider a couple of hours ago from my garden when I was out there. Mm. And they're quite, you know, they're quite distinctive. You see a paraglider, you kind of realise, yeah, you know, especially if you've seen them before.
Mm. Because I think, yeah, when I first saw it, I think I had this thought in my head, and I was like, I was trying to work out what it was as I stopped and stared at it. And I thought, the two things I thought were, it could have been a drone. And then I thought, no, it's a bit too big, I think. And then I thought, could that be a paraglider? And I was looking to see if there was a person underneath. And obviously, as I said, there was sort of a black oblong-ish shape underneath, but it was solid. And I thought, okay, so that's not a person. But I suppose there is a chance it could have been a person. But
and have you Googled around your area, specifically around your area, to see if anybody had had any, you know, other strange occurrences along that path?
No, I did sort of have a bit of a Google, but it's hard to know what to search sometimes, isn't it? And a lot of the things that I found were sort of just from the Kent area in general, not sort of local to where I was. I don't think there wasn't anything that I could see that was sort of a similar.
That's a strange one.
It certainly was, yeah.
See, the one I'm releasing on Sunday is this guy, and at the time he lived in a little town where everyone knew each other.
Mm.
And he was saying he was out of his friends at a bar, and this couple came in, and this couple, he said they were, you know, very strange looking, and they were wearing this kind of 70s gear.
Mm.
And he said they didn't live in the town because, you know, everyone knew everyone in this town.
Mm.
And, you know, America's like small town America.
Yeah.
And he's saying they came over to speak to him, and he chatted him for a while. And then from that bar, they all the group decided to go back to someone's backyard to have a few beers. And they came to, and they were talking to him, and they said, "We're not from around here. We're from outer space." But now and again, you will hear people that have had these encounters with people. And like I said, you know, you're always going to meet nutters in the street. That's normal. But sometimes you meet people which are not quite right or do not quite belong.
Yeah, it's just a weird, you know, when you sort of just look at someone and you think, something doesn't add up here. It was the whole, yeah, as you said, like with the last person you spoke to, the fact that they were sort of like dressed in complete 70s gear. It's like, I'm looking at this man in this like neon, different coloured sort of lycra situation. And just thinking, something about him just was not, just not normal. It's odd to explain.
And this is probably going to bug you now.
It is, yeah. And I just really wish that, you know, when I was sort of Googling initially, I was thinking to myself, eventually I'm going to come across something and I'll know, like, you know, somebody will have had the same experience or a similar thing happen, and I'll say, okay, yeah, that is it. Or perhaps I'll find a drone that looks exactly like what I saw, and that will answer the question. But I just don't think that's going to happen somehow.
So to our listeners out there, if you've had a strange encounter with someone on a path around a Kent area, get in contact. I'm sure Francesca would like to know she's not the only one.
Yes, please.
Wonderful. Okay.
Oh, that's perfect. Thank you very much.
Okay. Enjoy your weekend now.
And you.
Take care of yourself.
You too. Bye.
Yeah. The 40N Film Festival is a new celebration of cinema, created by people who have a passion for all things weird and paranormal. The current season is now open for submissions. Get involved if you're a filmmaker that has a penchant for poltergeists and adores aliens. Or if you're a producer devoted to demonology with a soft spot for sci-fi. The deadline for submissions to this IMDb-approved festival is fast approaching. Go to www.fortianfilmfestival.com to submit your film or buy tickets, if you dare.
Welcome to the show, Pastor Parry.
It's a huge pleasure and a deep honor, Nick, to be on your show. I admire your work no end, and it's a necessary and educative service that you're giving to anyone, to anyone and everyone. I'm very, very grateful to be one of your guests.
Wonderful. It is my pleasure. And you're calling from London in the UK.
For my sins, of which I'm sure there are very many, I currently live in London in the UK. Yeah, on election night, for local elections, of course, with people prowling up and down this road trying to change my mind. I've already voted. So it's a bit late for that. But yeah. Hailing in South London for the time being.
Now, Pastor Parry, you have interacted with both supernatural and the paranormal since you were a child. Would you be so kind as to let the listeners know a little bit about yourself, if you like, and a little bit about your experiences?
Well, in other words, right, I'm going to break one of the rules with which we discussed a minute ago and explain the three types of Catholic. There are three types of official Catholic: Roman Catholic, Alexandrian Catholic, and Antiochian Catholic, coming from the old ancient city of Antioch, you know, the Syrians. They're all official. They all developed roughly at the same time. And as I said to you earlier, you know, if I go to Rome, they call me Father. So there's no argument about being, you know, speech marks official Catholic, but obviously we're very small in this country. So I'm a very proud non-Roman Catholic, but Catholic pastor. I'm the founding pastor of St. Valentine's Hall, which is an openly LGBTQIA+ chapel of worship in Balham in South London. I'm a poet. I have a reasonably well-developed reputation as a British poet. I'm very honoured to be part of that tradition, that stream. I also dip into theatre every now and again. It's one of my great passions. And I can honestly, hand on heart, say, as a clergyman, I'm a serial experiencer for both supernatural and paranormal modalities of experience, most of which I haven't talked about until recently, because two things, you know, there are only so many hours in the day. I mean, I don't think your punter, with deep love and respect, realizes what the life of a clergyman is like. You know, you're lucky to get 6 hours sleep. So there isn't time. And also, I haven't really found many suitable outlets. But the moment I was connected with this show, I thought, yes, that's a must. Let's give it a go and let's explore some interesting themes.
Wonderful. Okay, so Your first experience, when did it begin, when you were a child?
Wow. I make a very strong distinction between supernatural and paranormal. I mean, I think the key is in the words itself. I mean, technically, oh my God, I'm going to get theological on you for a minute, Nick. I mean, technically, there's only one supernatural thing, and that is God, you know, above and beyond every single will system. So technically, that's the only supernatural thing. But I mean, people, you know, in modern discussion, you know, the way the word is used nowadays, they do talk about the supernatural. They tend to, you know, link things like ghosts, you know, apparitions, angels, demons with those realms. I suppose, you know, the language is changing slowly and now they say other dimensions. But I mean, traditionally, you'd have just said the supernatural realms as opposed to the paranormal realms. I mean, I remember reading Lyle Watson's remarkable book, Supernature, many, many years ago, and thinking this guy is onto something. You know, the paranormal, an extra bit of the normal world, wasn't it? You know, the world we experience with our five senses, which can probably be extended into a couple of extra senses, but it's still a part of our world. You're not talking about other dimensions and so on. I suppose, you know, one of the interesting themes is that my spiritualism has run in my family for at least three generations. I don't know how formally that was, but, you know, you get the odd aunt turning up at Christmas having, you know, having had an attack of the vapors with a local medium. Missus, you know, do you know what happened then? Which was always fascinating. I mean, certainly for me, I think it's been part and parcel of my life forever. But certainly the main ones I suppose I can kick off with, for want of a better phrase, is my first silvery disc UFO experience when I was at school, which taught me so much about this world as opposed to any other world. I was a young cub at a country school. I grew up in Fareham in Hampshire, which is a beautiful, idyllic, leafy, or at least it was then, part of the world to grow up in. Again, a little rural paradise, not much going on, although, of course, it's between the cities of Portsmouth and Southampton. Now, that's important because, of course, Portsmouth has a major naval dockyard. So there are links with the heavy artillery of our services, and the late Navy in particular, which, of course, in Britain has a reputation for unusual engineering and interest in the paranormal. People tend to forget that it's not the Army here. It tends to be the Navy. Don't know why. I'm sure there are people out there that know much more than me, but I have noticed that during the years. Anyway, we were all in the playground, primary school, on the verge of secondary school. I went to secondary school slightly late because it was a tiny, tiny village school. One of the teachers was sick. So, you know, they didn't want people rushing between, not like the military regimes nowadays. They didn't want people rushing. And it was during my swan song in late primary school. We all saw it, this perfect, beautiful, gliding, silent, silvery disc way above us in the sky. It didn't make a sound. It was devastatingly beautiful. That was my first reaction, and that's my abiding reaction to this day. Everyone in the schoolyard saw it. The reaction amongst the kids, my heavens, these things show so much about human nature. Some ran off and hid, the cowards. Others started arguing. Isn't that weird? I, for one, was sort of, I don't know, just agog at this little marvel floating above us, way above us, but floating above us in the air. I, with a few of the more robust kids, went into the teacher's common room. It was their tea break. And, you know, were saying things like, by the way, miss, there's a UFO floating over the playground. We were told to go away. Don't be silly. Oh, that's interesting. Oh, really? Well, we can talk about it in class. They wouldn't come out. Yes, I know it's their tea break, but if a little miracle breaks out, you don't just ignore it and get on with your cup of tea. They wouldn't come out. The thing floated away. We went back into our classrooms when, of course, the prefect came out ringing a bell. Oh, my God, that dates me, doesn't it? Ringing a bell, and we all went back into our classrooms. And the first thing the teacher said is, we want no talk of UFOs and all of that. So I lost my faith in British education that day. I've done rather well at it since, but that's no thanks to them. And it showed me not only what human nature is like to my young, sensitive mind, but also what open, you know, discussion is in this country. In other words, there isn't any. And, you know, it's to do with one's prejudices. You either accept an ideology or you don't. So you've given up the sort of Greek ideal of research and truth in science, which is ridiculous. So that was my impression of the silvery disc. Do I know it was real? Do I know it was some sort of mechanism? Yes to both counts. And that's my experience, I suppose, of the glittering paranormal at a very early age. I never forgot it or people's reactions to it.
Several other school friends all saw it. What kind of size would you have said this disc was? Roughly.
Gosh, I'd say the size, and I'm guessing because it was a long time ago and I'm absolute crap at that sort of thing. I'd say it was the size of about two London buses. And it wasn't just a couple of my friends. Absolutely everybody in the schoolyard saw it.
The whole schoolyard, apart from the teachers.
Well, they wouldn't come out and look. You know, I've never forgotten that. They just refused point blank to come out and look. It was their tea break. You know, how often does that happen during somebody's tea break? Oh, you know, why not be a revolutionary and bring a mug of tea with you? But they just refuse point blank.
Just put it down to children and their flights of fantasy.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, when the skeptical mob are always, you know, reacting to these shows with actually some quite specious arguments sometimes, I just sit there grinning. Right, I'm sorry you haven't had the experience. I have, and I know what it's like. I'm not saying I know what it was, because in those days I wouldn't have made a connection with, you know, unusual technologies. That was a craft of some sort. So I'll be talking about non-craft, you know, very, very different phenomena in a moment. But it was a craft. It was a vehicle of some sort. You know, I wouldn't have made the connection, obviously, because I was a kid, with something like experimental naval technology, which can't be ruled out, or something Jungian, you know, weird archetypes trying to take place in this world, you know, trying to manifest in this world. It was all too young. I was too young. But no, I mean, it's these things happen, and they happen on a regular basis. And I really think it's time our debate, not only within these circles, but outside these circles, started to mature a little more, you know, whether they're classed as aerial phenomenon by the Americans or just plain old UFOs. It's time to admit, yes, something is happening, something incredibly interesting, and debate like adults, because it affects every one of us, since it's true.
It does, yeah. And you're just one of many people which have had these experiences. And, you know, so many people don't, you know, don't come forward and don't share it.
Yeah. You know, I can understand why, I suppose. You know, people have busy lives, and look at the reactions that most experiencers get, unless they want to make a career out of it, or they're stalwarts. You know, this happened to me and I'm proud of that. But no, that's why I think it's time for the entire debate to mature. I think we all know at the back of our minds now, at the very least, something is going on. But since it is such a universal and constant phenomena, we really need to be adults and start asking some really tough questions, like, what is this and how does it impact us? Is it for good? Is it for ill? And remember, there are stories for good and ill with this particular phenomena. You know, I remember going off at a slight tangent. Oh, what was it? The guy that played Jacques Vallée, that was it. I can't remember. Agents of Deception? I mean, he was employed by NASA as a scholar, of course, to look into this phenomena many, many years ago. And he came out with some incredibly worrisome ideas that, you know, these phenomena, which is probably leading me into the next piece of our discussion, these phenomena can't really be said to be uniformly good. And, you know, the way they interact with people at times is on the verge of the demonic. And certainly, I'm not saying that's my attitude. I have a much more complex attitude than that. But, you know, the way when people are taken onto these physical vehicles, if physical is the correct word, I mean, they're making a, you know, let's put ourselves on an alien spacecraft for a moment. They're making a real cock-up of this survey. I mean, you know, let's send them a couple of textbooks from any decent university library. This is what the world is like. This is how a human being's configured. This is our physiology. These are our blood groups. You know, so it can't be that. You know, that survey for any technologically advanced civilization would have been concluded years ago. Yeah, and also, you know, if you look at what human technologists are saying now, they could have basically machines the size of a grape floating around and collecting blood samples based on this new drone technology. So why are these aliens interacting with us, if that's what they are, in this bizarre way, which to me begins to sound more like a ritual than an actual sort of experimental encounter? But as I say, you know, those aren't completely my thoughts. I'm just aware that they're there. And that's maybe another reason why we need to grow up and say, okay, how is this phenomena impacting us? And is it for our good as human beings? Well, this is where I get more pastory, I suppose, more of a pastor. I'm very honored to be a Catholic pastor. I'm a priest that actually works as a pastor. I mean, that's why people tend to very kindly say pastor. I know some people in my own church that would like me to just shut up about all this, but I don't think we can. You know, I think we're duty bound as honest human beings looking for the truth. Ye shall know the truth, and the truth will set you free, as it says in the Gospel of John. If any true words were ever said, I don't know when they were, because that is what we've got to keep in mind. I would say that my experiences of the supernatural realm way outbalances and outnumbers my experience of unusual technologies and the paranormal realms. I'll take one year when I proved my spurs. I got my spurs as an experiencer. So as I say, you know, if I look back, it was the life-changing summer of 1976, which caught my attention as an interactor with those realms, as someone getting responses from and reacting to those realms. It started, I mean, I used to live in the part of Fareham in Hampshire, in that sort of, you know, my parents' home, which was Fareham on the verge of Titchfield, this idyllic little medieval village that had largely kept its form. So, you know, very leafy, lots of back lanes, lots of you know, lots of rustling in the trees and that sort of stuff. And, you know, seeing the starscapes in the evening was amazing because there wasn't that much light pollution. And I used to have the drear task of walking my mother's dog. You know, why didn't she ever ask me if I wanted to? But that's an old gripe from many years ago. Maybe I didn't, Mum, if you're listening from wherever you are now. And sort of, you know, there was a lane called Fisher's Lane, which was this beautiful little lane going down from Fareham, leading you into Titchfield and the spectacular ruins of Titchfield Abbey, close to a pub, the Fisherman's Rest, which I frequented as a teenager with a healthy thirst later on. You know, and that was, I don't know, beautiful, beautiful, beautiful settings. I was walking early summer with my mother's dog, and suddenly had the need to look upwards. There was no explanation whatsoever. I did it involuntarily and instinctively. I've never known to this day what prompted me to look up, but I knew no matter what, I had to look directly above me into the air. What did I see? Two balls of orange light attached to each other in an adjacent fashion, literally plummeting towards me at an unbelievable speed. And it was so real and felt so physical, although, of course, it wasn't. And we're dealing with, I think, very different types of entity, that I didn't know what to do. I'm stood on the spot. Do I run? Do I stand still? What do I do? They made a U-turn, I'd say a couple of hundred feet above my head, and shot back up into the sky and then disappeared. It shook me very, very much. I told my parents when I got home. Oh, I think, yes, you know, late night in the evening in a Hampshire home, I don't think people are very interested in these things. They took it as one of those things. I don't know what that's meant to mean, but I think that's very British. It shook me to the core, as I say, because it was completely out of the blue and it wasn't of this realm, and I could sense that. I could sense these were the activities of spirits, of plasma beings. I'm not too sure those things are so distinct. Literally entities from elsewhere. And that marked literally weeks of intense activity with balls of light of various colours and various descriptions, nearly every night for months. It was nearly the whole summer. Yeah, sometimes they'd be a breathtaking white colour, slight bluish tinge sometimes at the edges, but blue. I think that was the main colour looking back through. You know, we keep with those ones, I think. I'll tell you one experience that certainly stuck with me through all these years. I was getting to the stage of working with them, and I knew they were interacting with me, and they were interested in what my reactions were and wanted me to communicate with them. So I said in my mind, how do I know that you're not just some sort of projection, you're not some sort of fantasy, you know, you're something about my own mind and my own circumstances that I really don't understand at the moment? Why don't you prove to me for once that you're there? And something absolutely extraordinary happened. I'd say it was about 50 feet above my head. This ball of light shot down the road in front of me, leaving a trail like a comet. At the very end of the comet, there were a number of colours, including orange and amber. But the ball of light itself, sparkling, white, glorious, pure, radiant light, shot down the road in front of me. Now, you've got to remember, this is a market town, and in those days, they didn't have streetlights everywhere, and we lived in that part of a Fareham that wasn't, you know, given to many streetlights and investment by the local council. What I didn't know, I knew there were trees down the road somewhere in front of me. I didn't know there was a courting couple hidden in the trees because it was just too dark and it was too far away. I remember the young girl to this day shouting out, "What the f was that?" And then it disappeared. It had answered me and it had disappeared. I suppose I'll move on to the last experience of that particular group. You know, my whole feeling was of something angelic, something above, something beyond, something advanced, something enlightening. I had absolutely no feeling that anything bad was happening. You know, what did the silvery disc do for me? I mean, it left me quite neutral. You know, oh God, what was that? Be interesting to find out. Whereas this did not leave me neutral. These interactions I found stretching, I found inspiring. You know, I always tend to know a genuine experiencer because, you know, one never knows what to do with these experiences apart from come on wonderful shows like this. But the last one, and I knew it was the last one, it was almost telling me it was the last one. Late summer, the sun was still in the sky, so I could see one of these silvery balls sort of approaching me, but having lost the need to get too close, it suddenly generated, it started floating upwards, it suddenly started generating around itself a series of colours. Do you know, I wish I'd written it down, Nick. I wish I'd written it down. It wasn't Roy G. Biv. It wasn't the colours of the spectrum as we know it, you know, red, orange, yellow. It was a different sequence. It floated upwards, it generated these colours around itself, and then was gone. And my initial thought was, oh, my heavens, if I'd have seen that back in the days of the Vikings, I'd have said I'd just seen an Asgardian, I'd just seen someone from Valhalla climbing up the Rainbow Bridge. You know, and what is the Rainbow Bridge? Of course, the higher levels of vibration. It was increasing its levels of vibration to go back to where it came from. Obviously, a much, you know, what's this modern New Age talk? You know, a much higher density than the one we're on. And it had to prepare itself to do that and start, you know, vibrating at a much higher rate. I knew there and then that was the end of that particular cycle of events. I've only ever had one dark experience, an experience of the darkness, which sort of, I don't know what that says about me. I hope that says something good. Which had happened slightly before the last ball of light. I mean, I was again walking down Fisher's Hill with my mother's dog, which was my want. I'd say a week, less than a week before this had happened. And I don't know, again, seeing above the trees, for me, it was always, you know, look to the skies, look to the skies. That was the constant theme running through all of my encounters in those days. And something like a gap in space. Now, obviously, it wasn't a gap in space. It looked like a negative within a negative. I could suddenly sense above the trees. It slowly took the form of a gigantic bat, and I mean about 20 to 30 foot, so not a bat, a different sort of bat. It started struggling with these, you know, lookalike wings to try and fly a bit higher. Weird stuff. Instinctively, I knew it was bad, and I disliked it. Instinctively, I got the feeling back that it was bad, and it disliked me. And it just couldn't really raise the necessary level of energy and momentum to do anything and literally faded away into the night sky. Curiously, I mean, I mentioned it that way around because I knew the balls of light experiences were coming to an end at that point. And of course, about a week later, I see whatever the entity was, the spirit climbing the Rainbow Bridge back to the realms of glory. And that finished that particular summer of interactions with the realms beyond.
The summer of 76.
Life-changing, Nick. I've never, ever, ever forgotten the fact that it's constant when it wants to be. And you don't come away from these things the same person. You come away with a different attitude and a different mindset to the one you had before.
That's absolutely right. You don't. And you're interacting with them as well. So there was some form of communication between you, yeah, as yourself and them.
Oh, I tell you something weird that I've only just started thinking again recently. It was almost as though they were trying to communicate with me. Don't you think it's just time to get on with it? Now, I've never quite known what that meant. You know, the whole attitude was, you know, you're meant to be doing something. Don't you think it's time you got on with it? You know, like gentle reminders all the time of something to be done. Who knows? You know, perhaps it shows like this all these years later. But certainly that was the running theme. And as I say, my experiences mostly have been of light enlightenment and you know, deeper consciousness, expanded consciousness and things like that.
Yeah, and it's something I hear quite a lot. When it comes to authors, musicians, artists, they have a very similar thing where they're kind of prompted and pushed in a certain direction.
Yeah, I think if you're in the service, for want of a much better description, of creativity, you know, there's an expectation, you know, let's get New Age vocabulary again. You know, the universe wants something. It wants something given back to the universe, which I've always thought was true and always, you know, tends to be a vital thing, an uplifting and energizing thing for everybody involved. I mean, you know, I've been thinking recently, if I'm completely honest with you, if these energy beings, these spirits, wanted to say to me, you know, when you're a clergyman, you should be talking about these things. It's only in the last couple of weeks I've been thinking that. But now it's happening and I'm talking about them. You know, it's not as though the Bible and other scriptures don't mention these things. Do I find it a threat to my faith? Of course I don't. You know, these things are far too sketchy, you know, and compared to a metaphysical system which has lasted thousands of years. No, of course I don't. But I do find it, you know, like, you know, what are religions anyway? You know, fingers pointing at the moon. You know, they're not these mysterious, numinous realities themselves, but they're pointing to it. And it was almost like these energy beings, these spirits were saying, you know, when you're in those positions, you know, when you're in that position, talk about these things, because that's what you're meant to be doing. Don't forget, if I was a shaman in Central Asia, a part of the world I'm deeply in love with, there would be absolutely nothing unusual talking about these incidents, these phenomena. It's only in this part of the world where, for reasons best known to the powers that be in the various churches, that they really don't want these things discussed. You know, it's not a question of, you know, can we smuggle it in or can we drag people into thinking it? I can tell everybody from my experience, they prefer nobody talked about it. You know, it's upsetting the apple cart. I can't see why. But, you know, the only people I can think of recently to come out, coming out of the supernatural, the supernaturalists and the paranormal closet, were people like the great evangelical thinker Chuck Missler, a remarkable human being who openly talks about UFOs, the fourth dimension, interactions with these beings, and what does it mean. And my personal friend, the Reverend Jim Wilhelmson, who is another right-wing evangelical, you know, so it's not true churchmen never agree, you know, if they're across the spectrum. I'm a nice, cuddly Catholic liberal. I count him as a very close friend of mine, who wrote a book called Beyond Science Fiction, where he was a serial experiencer as a youth. And in his, I mean, not speaking for somebody else, you need to have him on your show, Nick. Yeah, not speaking for somebody else. It was when he started praying that these phenomena stopped. And years later, of course, he has a ministry in Roswell. So, you know, there are weird synchronisms at work in all of this. But, you know, ultimately, these are mysteries pointing at an even greater mystery.
Introducing the High Strangeness Coffee Blend by Redacted Coffee Company, a medium roast of the Brazilian kind. This medium roast offers flavors of chocolate and vanilla combined with a distinct fruity taste and a unique sweet floral aroma. The experience of High Strangeness doesn't end there, with a sweet butter aftertaste that doesn't fade as your coffee cools. This coffee regains its flavors all the way through your cup, ensuring it truly is good to the last drop. The veteran-funded, employee-owned Redacted Coffee Company and UFO Chronicles podcast have partnered together to bring you the best coffee on and off the planet. Get 20% off your first order now at redactedcoffee.com/UFO. That's redactedcoffee.com/UFO. Or follow the link below in this episode's description or click on the banner of my website. This podcast is fueled by coffee oozing high strangeness. So what are you waiting for? Wake up to the strange. Do you think these experiences have kind of pushed you in a direction and, you know, your position where you are now?
No, I think if you feel the call to vocation, it has to be from you personally. You know, it's the way the ultimate, the absolute is interacting with you personally, the way the Christ energy is interacting with you. It can't be from anything else. I think certainly these phenomena open the mind. They open the minds of those who go through them. But no, I mean, for years, I didn't talk much about them for the very simple reason there are only 24 hours in the day, as I keep saying. Clergy are extremely busy people, and I tend to be, I've become a well-known, reasonably well-known LGBTQI+ activist. So most of the time I'm sort of chained to barricades of a very different type, you know, knocking policemen's helmets off. Can you do that anymore? And, you know, hell no, we won't go and all that 70s stuff, because, you know, I preach the social gospel. I'm trying to do ridiculous things like get some social justice back into the church and society generally. So that's been my central thrust. And if you put that, on top of the fact there's a busy ministry to maintain, plus I write poetry, plus I perform it, that really takes most of the hours of the day. Certainly what it did do, I think, was give me a wry smile regarding the ideologically skeptical. Not only did it allow me to see more clearly that there is no state of evidence whatsoever that would convince them, because they don't want to be convinced. They've taken a different worldview upon themselves. You know, not absolutely everybody. I mean, you know, there are people, there are scholars amongst the disbelievers as well. And I think they're open to arguments and discussions. I just noticed that's not the direction the so-called skeptics are going in the minute. I mean, it's a rival ideology, almost like the universities. You know, I mean, I'm honored to have 3 degrees. But I did notice during my time at university that they too were changing. And, you know, now there's a credo, which is, materialism. practical materialism, and there's a priesthood, the lecturers, who defend that as the final point of reference to which nothing else can really be added. Reductive materialism, and okay, if that's what you want to do, that's fine by me, but don't say you're still searching for the truth, because you're not, because there's now an ideology in place. And certainly a lot of the skeptics I've heard nowadays simply, well, you know, if an angel was stood in front of them and they themselves were glowing with light, they still wouldn't be able to see what was happening. But that's an ideological stance. That's not an open-minded stance. And, you know, good on you if that's what you want, but maybe that's not an accurate description of the world. I mean, I notice in the skeptical camps, the camps of skepticism, that basically that's entrenching now. But, you know, that's not scientific discovery. And it may give you, you know, if you're sticking rigidly to reductive materialism as the only explanatory mechanism for us as human beings and our understanding of nature as human beings, well, I mean, yes, you've got a reasonably accurate view of most of our experience, but certainly not all of it. And it's accurate only in the sense that it's shallow and it's narrow. So what you've actually done is refused to look at all of the other stuff that can say, actually, maybe it's not that. So there's nearly a choice nowadays between a very narrow bandwidth, you know, which people will look at, which is clear but really doesn't describe us as human beings at all, or the type of continuum we live in. Or there's the wider bandwidth when you're open to these experiences and it's less mess, you know, it's less convenient, it's much more messy, it's much more confusing, you won't get answers. Or at least the sorts of answers that can be clean cut and, you know, pinned down. But that's a more accurate view of life, and it's a more accurate view of our anthropology as human beings. So it saddens me that that's happening. But as I say, these encounters have given me a wry smile and the ability to see when someone is opposing these phenomena for the simple reason that they just don't want to believe it happens.
Your dark experience was interesting.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I mean, do I have a Manichaean worldview? No, I'm a Catholic. I do think there is a struggle in the spiritual realms, because scripture tells me so. And also that was sort of, I don't know, some sort of weird verification of that. You know, if all this light is happening and manifesting in somebody's life, I suppose there must be an intrusion by the other side, as it were. You know, I tend to have a view, an odd view. I mean, right, okay, what have all these experiences done for me? They've given me a strange view of life, that this world is something like a no man's land, this tiny world, this beautiful jewel in the hand of the Creator is something like a no man's land between two much bigger and much more powerful and much more removed realms, kingdoms, whatever. You know, we're caught between two vast spheres, two vast worlds that we really don't understand. And it will take all of our evolution to be able to get to grips with, one of which is the world of light and the other of which is the world of darkness. Now, of course, this is hardly original from me. I mean, Dennis Wheatley, a man I admire, you know, people, they always remember the occult novels, which is not actually what he was doing all the time. You know, he was so posh. You know, I bet he wrote more on wine tasting than he actually did on the supernatural. You know, I mean, the man was involved in politics and espionage stories, and they didn't catch on. So everybody homes in on this sort of stuff, which I don't think pleased him. I mean, I have friends who knew people that knew him, you know, one of those weird things. And I'm more certainly wasn't particularly happy with that. But, you know, a Zoroastrianism, which, of course, is one of the streams in the desert religions, you know, the original prophet Zoroaster or Zarathustra, who wrote a book called the Agathas, which is arguably the world's first holy book. You know, it's a response to the Bronze Age warriors from India attacking what would later be Persia, and him basically saying, you know, because they've suddenly got metal weapons, the first time in human history that we're aware of. You know, and he's saying basically in this book, I mean, when I first came across the Agathas and started to read it, I had to put it down. It was nearly like reading a modern mind talking about modern issues. I mean, you know, not talking about, you know, specific moral issues, but the outlook, the outlook of good, bad, right, wrong, yes, no, light, darkness, it was there. And I put it down and didn't read it again for years because it was just too undermining. And, oh, my God, you know, how old is that book? But he's the man that comes along and says, look, you know, what you claim to worship must be bad, because look at the mayhem and carnage you're bringing into the world. So he talks about Ahura Mazda, the Prince of Light, and Angramanu, the Prince of Darkness. And they're, I mean, it's not an eternal battle. People get that wrong. When the created world comes into being, then it's a continual battle between those two principles, those two powers, until the end of time. But then those principles separate forever and they never interact anymore. So, of course, that means, I suppose, in our modern vocabulary, the end of the earth, you know, when the earth is no longer here. Certainly it's in Zoroastrianism. It's in the three great desert faiths. Judaism, many, you know, people tend to underplay the fact without Judaism, you don't get Christianity. And also Islam. I mean, we're all brothers, we're all cousins, we're all family. And that way of thinking runs through the three great desert religions as well. So, you know, I'm not saying anything that's not in any of the scriptures of the great faiths that come from the desert. I mean, at the moment, I'm actually living in a haunted house. I'm living at my brother's place. There's a long story behind that. And the amount of psychic activity going on here is unbelievable. But that's a different issue, I suppose. Yeah, you know, there are negative entities, there are positive entities. And the idea in the desert religions is you make a choice. You know, why are you here? You're here to make a choice between the light and the darkness. In the light, you know, things thrive, they expand, they evolve, they become much more deeply what they were always designed to be. Whereas in the realms of darkness, things wither and they die, and there's little apart from servitude towards those powers and principalities that live therein. You know, so yeah, I wouldn't, would, yeah, it's nothing new for a clergyman to talk about those things, but certainly I suppose I feel very honored that the dark hasn't, heavens, extra prayers needed this evening, the dark hasn't intruded into my experience too many times. And it's always been for me much more of a, you know, you've got certain experiences, you know, don't pull back, and, you know, when the occasion arises, to talk about them. So I suppose that was one of the reasons we got in touch with your good self in this show.
And you're also a speaker on the Nephilim.
Oh, that bloody conference. Right. I have the honour to be the founding producer for the Nephilim Anthropology Conference. Right. What have all these powers done? They've eventually led to this conference. I first came up with the idea in 2013 or thereabouts. My dear friend, the Estonian author, Vladimir Wiedemann, thought that we hadn't put any projects on. I mean, I directed and produced 9 well-received, a major theatrical projects, plays. I've done 9, but, you know, there was nothing happening at that particular time. So he thought we could do something avant-garde and amazing, you know, different views of human history, which in those days was groundbreaking. I mean, we would have been the first, you know, if we'd have gone ahead with it. It fell apart. I remember saying to Jim, who's a lifelong friend of mine, you know, we're ordering tickets, we've ordered flights. You'll be staying at such and such accommodation. This will be incredible fun. And him saying to me something ominous, like, the Nephilim don't like being discussed. They don't like being talked about. Be careful. And me thinking, but not saying to him, because he's one of my mates, you know, oh, shut up, Jim, and all this evangelical gobbledygook. Within 2 weeks, the entire project had collapsed. The bank, for reasons best known to itself, withdrew our modest credit line. It never gave an explanation. And of course, that meant nothing could go ahead because nothing could be paid for. I went down and had a row with the business manager at the local branch, who assured me it would all be put back into place on time, and it wasn't. So never trust a bank. So the whole thing collapsed around us, you know, our ears. Jim has the sort of rather, I don't know, for me it's a bit too clinical and it's a bit too tidy view that, you know, the Nephilim, what people call demons nowadays, are actually the Nephilim, which I'll explain a bit more in a minute, I suppose. So that fell apart, and it was basically people talking me into reviving that idea last year. So it was during one of the lockdowns that we had a trial run. We put on a completely virtual Nephilim Anthropology Conference Part 1. We got a very good turnout, a glittering panel. We're forming a panel of speakers. So all I do is produce. You know, I deliver a lecture at the beginning, to set the scene of what we're doing. We have a wide range of views. You know, some have supernaturalist views, some have very anthropological views. I mean, certainly Vladimir Wiedemann was involved in Moscow State University back during the days of the Cold War, was talking about different types of human being at the beginning of time. Nobody was talking about it then, and the Americans were poo-pooing that. You know, there are very sizable human beings. There are tiny human beings. They're all human, and they believed at that time, Moscow State believed at that time, that they had evidence for that. None of it came over here because it was the Cold War and both sides wouldn't pay for funding, usually. Vladimir Wiedemann was a part of all of that. So we have actually quite solid scholarship looking at evidence and artifacts for different types of human beings. We've that side of it. We've the paranormal side of it. We've the UFO side of it. We've the supernaturalist side of it. And as I say, we're forming a permanent panel. The trial run was very successful. We held the second interactive hybrid leg. So in other words, there were people that could follow us online and there were people that actually turned up to our actual first physical staging at the Royal Asiatic Society. I have the honour of being a fellow there, so they did us proud. Endless coffees and biscuits all day, they did us proud. And so that's, I suppose, the two, you know, two events last year. We're also holding our third event, which for me will be the first real one because, you know, we've tried and tested all of the problems, all of the stops, and they now we know what works now, what doesn't work now. This coming October, the 29th and the 30th, at David Game College in London, and we've got really... a group of unparalleled experts, all of which are sharing their own research and their own knowledge into this subject, you know, with the view of collaboration, not point scoring. What does it all mean? Now, I confess that's my idea. You know, what are the Nephilim for me? They're a biblical mystery. To go further than that, I think you need to be very brave. Jim goes a lot further than that. But, you know, it goes back to Scripture, the Gospels, where the apostles ask our good Lord, how do we know that the end will arrive? You know, what will be the signs? And he does say, our good Lord says something very odd, as in the days of Noah. Well, that's actually a very strange thing if you look back to what Genesis says about the days of Noah. If you go back to Genesis 6 in the Bible, there are places you can find UFOs in the Bible. I do not agree with von Daniken that it's every single unusual description. The Bible is not a badly written history book, and it's not a third-rate technical manual. Religious books talk about religion. They talk about spirituality, the inner journey. They do not talk about those other things. Those other things crop up sometimes, but that's not the central thrust of those types of books. Therefore, when with respect to von Daniken, when he's talking about Ezekiel's wheels within wheels, that simply isn't what the text is talking about. And there are commentaries on those texts that were actually written by the rabbis at the time. So, you know, everyone has a fair idea what they're talking about. That's not to say there are no places in Scripture, which I think are clearly to do with UFOs. Most of the outbursts of the uncanny in Scripture are supernatural, not paranormal. Therefore, this is one of those weird texts that ticks every box. It begins with those who fly above. You know, what on earth is that? You know, they're an angelic group of some sort who descend to the earth and they want something forbidden. They want relations, carnal and otherwise, with the daughters of men. So I'm not, you know... You're already in the realms of mystery and your realms of metaphor, so it's difficult for me to go much further. But certainly the offspring of this forbidden union are the Nephilim. And the Nephilim are seen as sometimes very beautiful, sometimes hideously ugly, sometimes like giants that are the enemies of the human race. And they want nothing but our destruction. And they want they eat us, you know. They are meant to be preserved in the legends of giantism across the world. Every culture speaks of giants. Theosophy speaks of giants. I think Madame Blavatsky does an incredibly interesting job. You know, anthroposophy, Rudolf Steiner, they allude to it very, very interesting. But, you know, so you're looking at supernatural beings that cause a paranormal phenomena. Certainly, Jim would say that, you know, the biblical flood is linked in to basically a pollution in the human gene pool. And it was designed to rid the human race of that particular problem. I mean, I don't want to go down that route myself because it raises too many other issues, but certainly that is a view. You know, but certainly the Nephilim also turn up after the flood as well, which is another problem with it. All of the Nephilim that died during the flood were, of course, became disembodied spirits, which Jim would say, which my evangelical brothers and sisters tend to say, are what we would call demons nowadays. You know, an angel is an angel, an incredibly powerful being, and those that fly above are now imprisoned, according to some, into Tartarus, which is as far below Hades as the earth is below heaven. Terrifying by the sound of it. But you don't lose angelic attributes until judgment, if you're looking at all these things properly. They haven't been judged yet. Whereas the Nephilim have been judged. And, you know, it's the cycle of these demonic spirits trying to come back into our history and pollute it yet again, and then being exorcised by the church or the culture in question, the shaman, you know, the local holy man, being exorcised and expelled back into the realms of darkness, into the realms of Hades, and always looking to try and come back and disturb the people around, disturb the people involved in that summoning and around them. So what we're trying to do in the Nephilim Anthropology Conference is get together every single view, including people that don't go for any of it, to talk together, to interact with our audiences. And can we shed any further light on this absolutely fascinating experience? Yes, we can, and we're just about to do it, not in person with our guests, with our audiences, but also as a new an online newsletter after October. So, right heavens above, I only just thought of that. Were all these weird things in the past propelling me in this direction? Maybe they were, Nick. Who knows?
Wonderful. What I'll do is I'll put links to the conference in the show notes below.
Thank you, Nick. The main reason I brought this conference back was because we needed to think of some fundraisers, and I wasn't expecting it to take up in the way it has. I mean, certainly, we're also working with the Zohar Entertainment Group. I mean, they recently put on one of their channels, Ancient Secret Discoveries, some of our speakers. I mean, they called the selection of speakers that they chose Nephilim and Giants, Holy Earth, and Missing Holy Relics. I mean, to date, it has 478K views. So it's a subject that interests people. And as I say, we didn't tell them what speakers from our panel they should take. You know, we sent them some footage actually from the online version of the conference last April, and they made their own choices. There's certainly proved to be an interest. I mean, my view is it will continue to be a fundraiser, but because we need that income as a church, we're struggling to survive. We're seriously on the ropes. But also, we've touched a nerve. You know, history is not what it seems to be, and that's not to disparage mainline historians who I think overall are doing an absolutely great job with the documents. I mean, you know, can you prove somebody existed 5 years previously, let alone 1,000 years previously? So, you know, I think they're doing a great job with circumstantial evidence, documents. You know, you start going back to a certain point and write how many papyri are there to say anything. So I'm not having a go at academic historians. I do think they need to be a little wider in their views. And I think most of them think that as well. But also we then have to be realistic about government funding. You know, is any government going to start giving money for this type of research? It's highly unlikely. I mean, you know, how would they benefit directly in the modern world? So we're keeping going. I mean, I think what we're going to do is actually turn this into an academic panel. So next year, which I'm already beginning to think of, we'll have an expanded panel again. We want more speakers. And we'll also want, you know, I want to build a community, not simply a panel of experts, whereby we're all looking together at some of those fascinating stories in human history. And yet again, you know, my attitude to the balls of light. What does it all mean? And can we get further into this mystery? Will it, does it, and should it interact with us? And I think we're on the verge of actually making this quite a successful little undertaking.
That's wonderful. Okay.
Oh, it's been a blast. Thank you for having me on your show.
Pastor Parry, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing that for our listeners.
Well, I hope you've had, you know, an interesting time.
Wonderful.
You take care, Nick.
Okay, you take care of yourself. Keep in contact.
Thanks, Nick.
All right. And then
wonderful evening.
Yeah, and you don't work too hard in front of your congregation tonight.
Well, you know, I think if you become clergy, you give up the idea of weekends and too much time to yourself. But I wouldn't have it any other way. So anyway, look, God bless you. God bless you.
Take care of yourself, and I'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye now.
That is all for this week. Keep updated and connected with the show on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And if you have an encounter you'd like to share on the podcast, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com or reach out to me via the contact page on my website at ufochroniclespodcast.com. A big thank you to Francesca and Pastor David Parry for sharing tonight, and thank you all for listening. I will be back next week. Till then, stay safe and keep watching the skies. Goodbye.